Hello and welcome to another episode of The Practice Odyssey. I'm Jen.
And I'm Alex.
And today marks the day of our final book in our ginormous series we've been doing on Wise Omnibus, the practice book for the flute. Book 6, Advanced Practice. And wow, I'm not going to say anymore because I'll give it away. Yes, so that's what we've been tackling for the past 2 weeks.
Yes, we have.
Was it enough time? We're going to discuss this.
We are.
Yeah. Yes. So we're, as I mentioned, we're on book 6. Mm-hmm. This is the final one.
It is.
We've done the other 5.
We have.
Alex.
Yes.
What is this book?
This book.
Tell us more.
I'm so glad you asked, Jen. So book 6. If you've been along for the Odyssey, that is this season, you know that we've already done books 1 to 5, which for people who do not have the Trevor Wyatt practice book for the flute omnibus edition in front of them, is book 1, tone, book 2, technique, book 3, articulation, book 4, intonation and vibrato, and book 5, breathing and scales. That's what we've accomplished. We did all of those in 2-week chunks, described how they went for us, what we thought, and also some general practice tips and tricks to kind of get through them. That was the past season so far. So now we are on to book 6, which is Advanced Practice.
Advanced.
That's the name of the book, Advanced Practice. Mm-hmm. And
so
this
it's a warning
book,
in itself, really.
It is.
And we should have been warned.
We should have been warned. You have to be advanced to do this. So 2 degrees in, are we both advanced? I don't know. We found out this week. Yes, and this book, as well as the rest of the books, you know, were written by our flute pedagogue, Mr. Trevor Y. And if you've listened to a few of the other podcasts, you already know what's coming. But we normally do a biography about the person who wrote the method or a little bit about whatever we're studying. However, since we are doing this all about the one gentleman, we are now doing fun facts about him in every episode. If you would like a complete version of his biography, then just go back a few episodes to Tone. To the book 1 tone, and then you'll have the whole thing there. But our fun fact for today, Jen, is did you know, Jen, that Trevor Y founded the British Flute Society?
Oh.
Entire British Flute Society, founded by Mr. Y.
He's got a pretty impressive legacy.
Yeah. This is true. It helps that he has so many books. Like this one, which I can now break down for us. So this book, Advanced Practice by Trevor Y, is broken up into 7 different sections. So he has a section on tone, a section on posture, section on finger technique, another section on articulation, another section on top register, and the last 2 are breathing and intonation. Interesting choice of order based on how he recommended us practicing. But anyways, I'm getting into verdict territory already.
Verdict territory already.
But yes, so the book itself is only about 30 pages long. We've got 7 sections and 30 pages. Mm. So while a lot of the other books delve in with lots of examples, this book mainly focuses on kind of mindset and how to further what you've already done in the past books. So sometimes he would reference, you know, go back to book 3, make sure before you start this, you have a good handle on this. Then to extend that, do the exercise from book 3, but this way instead. So that's kind of how the book is formatted, with a lot of referencing of the other books. And he also, I might be jumping a little bit with week 1, but he also has in his foreword, which I don't think he mentions in any of the other book forewords, that, you know, in this book, he says more detailed in information and explanations will be found in Proper Flute Playing by Trevor Y.
Oh, that
which... If you, I know he's referenced it a few times, but when I actually went online and looked for a copy and I got a hold of a few of the first pages, and it sounds like so much more of a practice guide than anything we've had here so far. So now
really?
I'm curious, why doesn't he just put that in the omnibus? Anyways, I'm kind of in verdict territory already. I'm jumping the gun so much, but Yes, that was something very interesting for me at the very beginning. So
maybe we need to do that in a coming season.
An addendum to this season.
An addendum.
Yeah, just add this on. But anyways, I may talk about that later. But yes, that is how the book is structured, and he recommends that, you know, some more detailed information would be found in Proper Flute Playing if you have a copy of that, or you can do the companion book. Yeah, because it's the companion book, he says, to the entire practice book for the flute series. He says that in book six, Jen.
Why isn't it part of the omnibus?
What? No. Yeah, I mean, like, he does not say that in book one.
No, he doesn't.
No. He says, you know, he references it, like...
He often references, yeah.
Yeah, which contains a practice guide on how to best to schedule these exercises or how to work on it. But he never says it's, like, a companion book until book six. Mm. So, anyways, a small beef, but before I spoil anything else... Jen, how was your first week practicing advanced practice? Do you feel that your practice advanced during your first week?
Did my practice advance? Yes. Well, it gave me a lot of food for thought and a lot of rabbit holes to run down. This one gave you a lot of food for thought. So my first... order of business was to read through the book and try and figure out how to tackle it. Because as you mentioned, Alex, it's got a lot of sections. Basically, it seems to summarize and add on. It's almost like the epilogue for every single book which has come before.
Ooh, yeah.
All stuck into one book. So there's a lot to think about. So I tried to figure out how on earth I was going to practice this over 2 weeks. What was this going to look like? So I read through the whole book. So I came up with some ideas. He's very direct with his warm-up directions. He says, look, warm up for 10 to 15 minutes. So I was like, right, we're off to a flying start. And then there is no direction after that. So I kind of made it up. So I then skipped backwards into the book and I looked at the tone and suggestions and recommendations he had made for ways to practice your tone every day. So I put in a bit of tone work every day. And then the technical was more organized for us. He had a whole list, much in the tradition of Moyes. I was like, where have I seen all these letters before? And then I thought, Moyes.
So he finally references him too in one section. Yeah. He says these were, you know, like inspired or derived from Moyes.
So very similar to Moyes, he's got all of these exercises written out for technical work, basically an advanced version of what you find in book technique, in book two technique.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like next level because it's advanced. They're advanced. So he's got a list of daily for the first week and then he roars into how he wants you to practice for a month because basically I did... warm up through to technical every day. And then I would kind of cherry pick what I was kind of interested in the following sections, which came after that. What struck me with this book is if you do not have the other books, in this omnibus. So the thing is you can buy the omnibus completely in its entirety, or it does come in where you can buy each book individually.
Yes.
So if you have an individual book, by golly gosh, you better have the whole set because or else this book is going to be very difficult to understand his examples because basically he references all the time from all the other books. So you kind of need the whole omnibus, really. This is the one where it's most impacted, whether you have got all access to all the books or not. So I basically would switch around his ideas of his suggestions for tone and embouchure and making your tone bigger, and there were lots of fantastic thoughts there. The technical. Okay. So in his technical exercises, they're a lot. Alex, I don't know what you're going to say about the technical, but he suggests in the way to practice these technical exercises is to play each little bar four times through before going on to the next one and play it as fast as you can kind of slightly uncomfortably do it. And don't worry if it's a bit messy. Just try and do it at that speed and only stop and practice if it's a complete mess. I found this really hard.
I really hard. That. Yep.
Really hard, because when I'm practicing these kind of technical exercises, I'm normally using them to like make my technique neater. So like improve coordination issues, like feeling of relaxation. And I don't know, maybe I wasn't doing it in the spirit of how he wanted it. But when I tried doing that with the metronome on, like at a pretty uncomfortable speed, mm-hmm. like I was just getting really tense and really frustrated at all of the,
yeah,
all of the messiness, which I could hear. And I found that I really didn't, I don't know, maybe it's just the way I practice. I found it very hard to practice that way. And I found I just got really tense. So
yeah, which goes against what he was saying in the body and hand positions under posture.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Cause I was just getting a bit flustered about like, oh, like this, the man, like my C to A, like I can tell that my thumb is being a bit lazy and not coordinating yeah. properly with this movement. And I just felt like I was practicing in like uncoordination. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so I tried for a few days to run through all of the exercises that he suggested, and it took me so long and I was so tired by the end of it. I was like, nope. So after yeah. then I just kind of split it into maybe one or two of his suggested exercises, and then included the low register section, which he includes every day in his recommended run through of all the exercises. He's got one yes. which just focuses on the little finger of your right hand, which is your pinky finger, which has to do like gymnastics and play like four notes. It's got control of four keys down there, and it's yes. very hard to control and get fast and agile. So he makes you practice those every day. So I did practice those every day. My little finger was getting really agile by the end, so I was pretty mm-hmm. I was pretty happy with that. But what was really interesting in his suggestion of how to practice, he runs it by week, and he's got 6 days of working through these like little technical exercises, which essentially isolate. They're mm-hmm. almost like little isolation exercises for a particular couple of notes, just to get really comfortable with how those patterns could go and what your fingers need to do to be able to play them. And then in day 7, he says, practice scales. So mm-hmm. it was really interesting, because I guess like something you always get told is practice, when you said practice technique every day, you kind of have, you often assume that means playing scales, but he seems to be reversing that and saying practice technique every day, but actually practice all these really, really tricky bits. And then that means your scales, and then practice your scales at the end of the week, and you'll find that they've improved a lot, because right. you've fixed a lot of really hard things. That's given me a lot of food for thought. So it was very interesting for me. So I think I'll leave it there in terms of my week one.
That sounds like a really cool week one. Yeah, with like a little yeah. bit of like an existential quandary at the beginning yeah. and then yeah. enlightenment at the end.
Oh my gosh, my technical world has just been flipped.
That's so good.
New identity crisis. Yeah, so there we go. Technical identity crisis is the soundbite of my week one.
We'll add that Alex to our YouTube thumbnail.
Yeah. Identity you're welcome. Crisis?
Subscribe so to
Alex,
us on YouTube.
Was your week one? Did you also get an identity technical
crisis? Crisis? No, unfortunately Ooh. Not. I have
what
to
do you mean,
say,
unfortunately? That's great.
but I feel like you've come out the other side stronger, whereas mine was just kind of like, it was a good week. It's okay. so funny, because I think normally I tend to strive more towards, or I go more towards the technical things instead of the like tone, expression, posture stuff. But, and like sometimes you focus a little more on that in the first week, and then we always like switch it up. But yeah, no, this week that was where I focused. So I would say... Week one, during week one, in my personal life, I also finally got to start going back to yoga classes in person. So I was and I was so excited because in my yoga class, we did the breathing, which unfortunately I don't think Wide mentions in here, but I learned it somewhere down the road and I can't remember if I started doing it for flute playing or if a flutist told me to start doing it for my flute playing, but like the alternating nostril breathing. And we spent so much time warming up in the first class because this was the first time I had tried it with this teacher as well. And she spent a really large chunk of time warming up before we did our first sun salutation. And I have to say, the amount of time, like, at first I thought it was a little crazy, like, usually when I start a yoga class in the past, you know, sometimes there's a bit of chanting to kind of warm up the vocal cords to, like, help you breathe a little more. And then maybe you do, like, one or two stretches, and then you dive in. But she had, like, a whole, like, we warmed up for at least 20 minutes, which, luckily the class is, like, an hour and a half, so it's not an hour. But, and it was not just, like, we did breathing, we did singing, we also did, like, free movement for a bit where the goal was just to move however you want, just with the idea of like warming up your body. And then like, what else did we do? And then you finish it with like a final really short meditation just to kind of set your intention. And then you should be focused and then you dive in. And I have to say, after doing such a long warm up, I was able to do so many sun salutations in a row without any pain, without any soreness or anything. Like it was, it was phenomenal. So coming off of the back of that yoga class, realizing, I mean, we all know warming up is essential, but you know, just having it driven home a little stronger, it was, so I decided, I was like, I'm going to spend that same amount of time, like, in my flute playing, warming up like crazy. Yeah. So, and I spent a lot of time in week one, just kind of with the warm-up area, just kind of really changing how I approached my practice daily and putting, like, more, like, closer to, like, 30% of my time warming up my muscles and everything before I would even start to work on anything else.
That's amazing.
And I went through like, he does all of these kind of fun, exercises like, with jars to like help improve your tone quality and color, which I would highly recommend if you read the book. I did all of those, which was also a little easier to do when I wasn't at home and I needed to still do some practice. I could just quickly like grab a jar and be like, hey, let's try this one. So I spent a lot of time doing that. I also started singing a little bit more. Usually, like, because right now I'm commuting in a car to get to work, I would sing a little more, like, on the car ride there and back. And then before I would practice as well to kind of help warm up the vocal cords and, like, get everything kind of moving, get my breath going in the right direction and everything. And then I tried doing some of his embouchure technique as well, just trying to really warm up my embouchure as much as possible, which he talks about and does like a nice little area. But then again, of course, he references practice book one, like you were mentioning, Jen. So if you don't have practice book one, some of this was a little tricky or impossible. But he gives a lot of really great points. And then I also liked that he mentions, where does he say it? Like, you're not remember, you're not practicing for this week. You're practicing for this year or like the end of the year. And I thought that was really great because sometimes it's hard to remember, like, oh, this is what, like, so every time I'm warming up, I was like, yeah, remember, because afterwards, everything just works a lot easier, you know? So I spent a lot of time with his little, I mean, it was kind of the wrong week to pick a warm-up week because his warm-up is one page in the book, his warm-up section. But he references all the other books where you have to do it, and it reminded me a lot of Philippe Bernold's Les Soufflés Laissons. So just where you're like kind of getting the air moving, kind of getting the fingers moving as well, finding that coordination, and then just also being okay, like when it's not perfect and being like, okay, let me just try it again. And I like that he said, you know, it's not important what you play, just so long as you enjoy it. So I also aimed for that in my warm-up. Always trying to, like, enjoy it. So I did some, like, pop renditions in different keys. So, you know, I would take some swelling from, like, a Taylor Swift song and then say, okay, I think she did it originally in this key. Let's modulate it to this key, blah, 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 and everything. Or not modulate, transpose, I guess. But yeah, so I did a bunch of that. And then I also started on his and posture. Okay, yeah, posture was the other one because in my yoga course, we talk a lot about posture. And so I just kind of read through very slowly his section on body and hand posture, where he kind of gives you a breakdown of how to keep a good, you know, working body posture while you're playing the flute. And I guess some of this needs to be said, like, you know, he says, do not practice any difficult technique exercises with a bad right hand posture. I would say also left hand posture is also important, but I think that might just be the girl who's been living in Germany too long.
Well, often you see really funky positions with people's thumbs holding the flute up.
That is very true. Yeah, the thumbs can be doing some weird, crazy things sometimes. My first week, I spent a lot of time on there. And then, I have to be honest, the first week I kind of skipped over. I saw his monthly practice schedule, and it gave me a little bit of stress. And I said, not in week one. No. that's week two's problem. But I did, and I also noticed how in his advanced daily exercises in book... was it three technique where he breaks down like how, you know, he does, he gives you like a couple of bars of a pattern when then tells you to play it in different keys, and how he would tell you to play it in different keys. He would show you a key signature and just say, apply it to the same notes there. But in this one, he wrote it all out. I wonder why. I'm very curious as to why he changed technique from book five to book six for that. Just a small editing thing. It's not book five, book three to book six. But I really found, I think the highlight for me this week that I discovered was his 26 digital exercises, the digits, which he calls the digital exercises. But then I think later in the book, he calls it the digit exercises. So I'm a little thrown. But it was perfect because so many times I've been working with my students and I'm like, yeah, you know, this is really good. You just need to work on your right hand little finger, getting that coordination down. And I always write out like the most mundane exercises, like here's a way you can do this because you need some music. And now he has them. So I never have to write it ever again. I can just copy this page or tell my students to work out of this page in the book and say, here you go. This is what you have to do. Play this for 3 weeks. You're all set. You might have to refresh it. It's just like crunches. You're not good forever. It's a muscle. Discovering those little gems was probably the highlight for me between warming up and doing that. And then I also touched on how he does the tonguing between the lips. So I do that already, but I was trying to get as much as done as possible with also keeping to my nice warm-up schedule. So I did start the tonguing between the lips the way he teaches it.
Find a change with how he approaches it to how you've been taught it in the past?
Yeah, that is a great question. So I'm just turning to the page now. He teaches it really similar to how I learned it, but then, then I thought about it. And who I learned it from was, well, I learned it from two different people. I learned it from Susie Milan, one of her master classes, who's a British flutist. And then I learned it from Julien Bodimont, who was a student of Paul Edmund Davies,
a student of
Trevor Y. So it makes sense that I learned it quite similar. So I went through it and I was like, hey, this all sounds really familiar. And then he knows does. But I thought it was fun because did he ever talk about flutter tonguing in any of these books? Because his articulation series, he starts off with, you know, first just doing the diaphragm breathing to kind of show what role the air plays in articulation. Back in book three or two, articulation. And then he talks about single tonguing and where the placement of the tongue is for that. Then he does double and triple tonguing. And then he does this more advanced tonguing between the lips. Some nice ASMR for y'all there. And that kind of gives it a little more pronounced articulation. Yeah. I would say. Would you agree? Like tonguing between the lips.
I would agree. It's definitely the most... I would say it's like quite a distinctive sound.
Yeah. And then there's also, which he doesn't discuss in here, but there's also like tonguing with just the lips. So you go, which is another can of worms too, which but yeah. he never discusses flutter tonguing, so I wonder if that's just, you know, assumed knowledge that you would learn eventually, or it's so easy as long as you know how to roll your R's, you can flutter tongue.
Yeah, it's interesting because well, I guess this is going into my week too. So
That's perfect. I can just, that was the end of my week one. Just lots of warming up, checking my posture, having fun with the digital exercises and articulation. So that was about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so tell us about your week two and how this maybe elaborates onto it.
Hey. With my week two. So just, rolling into it. Week two. This was when I kind of dived into all the like little magical thoughts that he has about many, many things. And that's kind of what I was really preoccupied by, was just the insane amount of resources. I thought it was really interesting and I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yes.
Like, you're right. He doesn't really talk much about any of the special extended techniques.
He does not.
Of the flute, except for circular breathing.
Yes. I know.
He's got a whole section on circular breathing. Mm-hmm. And arguably I would say that's probably the hardest.
Yes.
Or definitely one of the hardest extended techniques you can do on the flute. Circular. For those who don't know what circular breathing is, it's the sorcerer's skill of blowing air out through the power of your cheeks or mouth muscles, I believe, while simultaneously breathing in through your nose to top up your lungs. Anyway, it's like the ultimate, like, pat yourself on the head, rub
yourself.
You've
made yourself a bagpipe.
Kind of you made yourself a bagpipe. Yeah. Yep. Essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically you can create this long drone. So great. Like, you know, that never stops, but you don't have the bagpipe little stomach. You have to do it all yourself, or bladder, sorry, they call it a bladder.
You've essentially got your cheeks and head cavity. That seems to be it. But yes, I thought that was really interesting. Like, out of all of them, like you say, he doesn't mention flutter tonguing, which is I would say pretty standard.
Yeah,
even
and
in
used
early
more
20th
frequently.
Century.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't mention that. Maybe he just thinks it's so easy you don't really need to think about it. I don't know.
Yeah, but there's the two types. Anyways, we can go down that road.
There are the
podcast,
two types. You got throne and tongue. I know. I thought that was really, really interesting why he chose to do circular breathing. On the flip side, his explanation and way of learning circular breathing makes it very approachable, far more than I have found in any other way. To be honest, when I've looked at circular breathing in the past, I've read the instruction manual on how to learn how to do it, and I have decided, I might do that next week. Shut the book, put it away. One actually inspired me. I was like, actually, this could be achievable. So I've started all the exercises and steps that he tells me to do. So far, I am practicing the way of breathing air out of your cheeks while trying to also breathe in through your nose. Anyway, one day I'll get to the section with the straw and the glass of water. I will dream. No, it's good. Like, so many gems in this book. It's, I just had so much fun kind of jumping to and fro from the different sections and experimenting with ways he talks to about approaching things, in this book. So that is my week two, pretty much a week of experimentation of all of the different sections in this book and very small steps towards circular breathing. How was your week two?
Aw, my week two is good. I focused on my upper register. especially the upper register digit exercises, because he actually gives fingerings in this book for all of, like, up to, like, high F, was it? F sharp.
Yeah, high F sharp.
But yeah, it goes up to an F sharp. So even a half step higher than that one. And I was so excited to see also fourth octave exercises. This book was just like, I had it earlier in my teaching like experience, because it's just give your students when they're up to this point, you know, like this.
Yeah.
Because then when you're teaching them like a Prokofiev sonata or something, obviously you're more advanced students. Like what you were saying earlier, Jen, about how if you focus on like a little tiny section or kind of overshoot the goal, like what you like working on these little tiny things, then when you do the actual goal, it's a lot easier to manage. So in a way, like if my student has to play a high C in some piece, having them learn how to play comfortably up to high D or E or F, then C seems like no problem.
Because all of a sudden it seems way less intimidating.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of lose that fear, which, you know, when you're playing an instrument, which is so dictated by how your air column is, which is affected by your nerves. It's really important to have the like a good sense of that. So I had a lot of fun playing through some of that to kind of get an idea for my my students as well, which ones I might be able to use with them. Love that he had semitones in there as well. Like first time I've seen, like outside of like Robert Dick and a few other books where they mentioned how to play semitones. So I was really excited about that too.
Yeah.
And then I also focused a lot on the fourth, did I already say this? I did all of his digital exercises, but up in the octave. So, because that's what he also mentions to do. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. I also, like you, loved that he includes all of the extra fingerings on how to play notes extremely softly. And a lot of them were the same ones that Jan Gippo includes in his piccolo book. So I was like, hey, I know this alternate fingering for the piccolo. That's cool that we can use it on the flute too. But yeah, and then I also dipped my toe into circular breathing at one point long ago when I was a wee lass. I did play Ian Clark's Great Train Race, which in there it's encouraged that you circular breathe.
Yes.
And I got up to a minute, Jen. I could do a minute.
Wow.
That was it though. And I did a minute, I think, on my recital, which was fun. But but that was
That's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that he mentions that, you know, like you, because when you're playing it on the flute, there's always like a little bit of like when you're expelling the air from your cheeks, like, and with your nose, there's like a little bump in the sound, which is, I never got rid of. I never got that far. But did you fix that? He says, you know, you just put a trill over it, no one notices. Which is what he does in the piece.
Ian Clark's been quite forgiving, yes.
So if you wanted some sort of like incentive to learn how to circular breathe, I would recommend that piece, because you also, it's on a high register note, so your embouchure is already pretty set. And so I would say it's easier to circular breathe on a note that's held with a trill in the upper register.
Okay, so, I'll try that then.
It's a lot of fun.
That's a fun piece to play. I mean, you don't need to circular breathe it, but it's way funner.
It's just, I think it's one of my favorite pieces to get people introduced into extended techniques. So I really enjoyed his take on circular breathing. I think how I started back in 2007 was with the toothpaste technique. Where you practice strengthening the muscles by making very strong, like when you spit out your toothpaste after brushing your mouth, like kind of like you just spit it out, and then noticing that kind of like strength behind it, and then eventually trying to like spit it out with like air in your cheeks, and then slowly just like he mentioned, you know, doing it with the straw as well, and then blowing with only the air in your cheeks. But I refreshed a little bit on that, and that was kind of fun. I'm still not up to the minute I was back in 2007 or 2008. Wow. But I like that he had a little musical example of like cheeks, breathe, lungs, cheeks, breathe, lungs for the and with all of it kind of like dictated at a time signature. So it kind of helped you like visualize that, which I would imagine for visual learners is really handy. But yeah, so I had a lot of fun with that. And that's kind of where I ended my week two with upper register and circular breathing. Mm. So I saw what he said about scales and I then promptly ignored it, Jen. I'm so sorry. But I did have fun. I feel bad because now I kind of want to go back and see if that does give me a nice revelation on how to approach scales. Like, you know, do all these really intense isolation exercises or isolated exercises, and then just be able to play the most beautiful Leonor solo opening. Well, the wrong key, but you guys know what I mean. So, but yeah, it would be yeah. It'd be really fun. So yeah, that was my week too. And I think that means that we are to our verdict of book six.
What? I know. Oh, the end of the why.
The why. Well, before we do our final, we'll do a recap of the whole season for you listeners in fortnight. But yeah, the in-betweens.
The whys.
The whys. But yes, Jen, so what is your verdict? How do you feel about this book? Would you recommend it? Is it staying on our ever-growing bookshelf of music books?
Oh my gosh, I know. I'm going to have to get a whole library at this, right? This is such an amazing resource.
Mm-hmm.
I think the warning is in the title already. Advanced practice. Because I would not recommend this to a beginner. You would probably get overwhelmed.
This is not your first blue book.
For, as he says, he's very clear that in his advice,
most of it is for advanced players, some of it for beginner and advanced players alike.
There it is in the foreword. So most of it is for advanced players, though he says some can be for beginner and advanced. So he does give warning in the foreword that this is for advanced students or players or going into professional. I think what I love about this book is it is kind of a guide. It assumes that you know a lot about how to teach yourself the flute already. And basically, I think it just, what its strength is it really, it's just got so many ideas about how to, other ways to practice the flute and ways which you can freshen up or change perspective on how to change it. Like, for example, my great revelation on technique where, yes, have I been assuming technique when I practice technique every day that must include scales? And if I haven't practiced scales, then, oh my gosh, I haven't practiced technique. No, not necessarily. I think that would be my verdict is this is an amazing practice resource for an advanced player or a teacher directing certain nuggets of wisdom to a beginner or intermediate student. I think if you're at that level and you take this book and you could quite easily become overwhelmed. But I think for someone who knows how to practice the flute already, knows, can identify what issues they have with their technique and what they want to improve or new ideas that they want to have, then this is 100% a fantastic resource. Yeah, so that's my verdict. What's your verdict and thoughts on it, Alex?
My verdict. I think I would agree with you that this is a great resource for people who know what they're doing on the flute and are looking for some like new flute inspo for their practice and maybe some new revelations. Mm-hmm. And then also if you have like students, I felt like this was a lot of things where I felt some of it I was doing automatically, but just writing it out myself. But this was a great resource where I no longer have to write it out myself. I can just tell my students, get this book.
Take a photo.
But yes, I would say, like you mentioned, without the other books, this book is kind of not superfluous, but it would be really hard to get as much from this book if you don't have books 1 through 5, because often he references that for certain exercises and how he describes things, and that would be quite useful. So I would say, yes, this book would be in particular aimed for more like people that maybe are in like university, like freshmen or onward, doing their bachelor's plus. Because also that's usually when we start developing our flute studio. And that's where this would also come in handy when you're teaching your students, is kind of a reference on how to explain or describe certain things like circular breathing or, you know, helping them play softly in the upper register. So this would be quite handy for that. So I would say as a teaching resource, amazing, great. And as like an everyday practice thing, I feel like it's still just like inspo, because all that he says is really good, but it wasn't really like how to structure. It was more like, if you feel like you're in a structure rut, here are some ways to get out of it, you know?
Yes.
But yeah, I think that would be my verdict too. So kind of just like a great resource for teachers and advanced flute players.
Yeah.
So yeah. And definitely get books 1 and 5. And if you're super good, get the companion book as well. Do what we did not.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't tell us till book 6. So.
No. I know. And then it's like, oh, man.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have an addendum episode for y'all coming up in the future.
So. Surprise, we'll it's the review. Not really. Well,
oh gosh,
it was a pretty good book to finish up. I feel like it did kind of summarize everything beautifully and round it out, and it was a pretty, it was ended on a high, this omnibus. It was pretty cool. All right. Well, I think that wraps up our season of Why. Join us back in 2 weeks to listen to our review where we will
review the whole book.
Reminisce. We will reminisce about the whole omnibus, the highs and the lows and the whys and all of it. Look, if you enjoyed this Practice Odyssey, you can find it on all podcast platforms and let us know what you think. If you have any thoughts about this book, write to us at thepracticeodyssey@gmail.com. Please, if you're in the mood, it would be lovely if you could leave us a rating or comment on Apple Podcasts. Mm-hmm. And if YouTube is more your thing, subscribe to the Practice Odyssey podcast and like. The music in this episode is by the fabulous Alessandra Woods and our show art from Ivan Potter Smith. And as always, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in 2 weeks for the full review. Anyway, I hope you have a great fortnight. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.